Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
I'm sorry, but this is probably going to be the last time that the three of us are ever going to be here. So can we just enjoy today?
First of all, you know, the intro is my thing.
All right,
You don't improvise the intro. Okay. This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 137 for the week of December 5th, 2016. I am Kung Fu Push-Up David T. Cole, and I'm here with Steelers Hat Sarah D. Bunting.
Hey, Dad.
Weather Trader Tara Ariano.
I don't know either.
And Shameful Family Secret Allison Lohuff.
No one was supposed to know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the last Extra Hot Great before Dave and I get divorced, apparently. Thank you for...
Despite the ominous intro clip, nothing's happening.
No. It's not.
I'm actually paddling out on an ice floe right now, you guys. Good luck.
Thank you for bearing with us while we took a week off for Thanksgiving / my birthday, but we are now back. And back with us is the great returning champion, Allison Lohuff. Hello, Allison.
Welcome,
hello.
Allison.
Yay!
We are here to talk about one of the many shows that Allison Lohuff covers for us at Previously.tv. No, not Keeping Up with the Kardashians. We are, in fact, talking about This Is Us, NBC's big breakout family drama series. And let's start with that. Allison, why do you think the show has been such a huge hit straight out of the gate?
I really think that it is, well, first of all, speaking to a generation of people, you know, just like sort of rolling in Generation X with that, whatever the generation is that's behind us, the millennials or whatever.
Gen Y, I don't know. I think. And then the millennials.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there's a lot of nostalgic elements to it with the look back at the 80s. And it is, it's a show that sort of has something for everyone. You know, there's a lot about parenthood in it, and there's a lot about being an adult child of a parent that's still really active in your life, and the adoption storyline, and it's they're at the age, they're supposed to be 36, although the math does not exactly work out when you kind of look at the timeline, what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. They're at an age, you know, when things are sort of crossing a line of, you know, it's getting a little bit too late to be making some big life changes that they're all on the verge of making. So
it's like being our age and shopping at IKEA.
Yeah, it really is.
Fuck you, Dave.
We still have IKEA stuff. He's joking.
And also there's all the elements of the warm lighting and the, you know, strummy music and everything. It's sort of this combination of all that is like brings the tears every week.
Yeah. I Sarah, this was the first episode that you watched this week, right? I know it definitely was Dave's.
I actually made sure to get caught up.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, because I had been told that I would really love the show, and I do.
Oh, good.
It's not perfect. We will get to that. Mm-hmm. Kevin.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is something about, like, despite the fact that some of these moments are like emotional Mary Sue's a little bit, and everyone sort of says the right thing and has this perfect phrasing, it's like, first of all, if a show has rehabilitated that little rodent Ventimiglia for me, that is a Hall of Fame show. Like, if it does nothing else good and gets canceled in like 12 episodes, it did that for me somehow. Right.
Well, what I was going to say was,
Sterling Brown could just be the president of TV. Like, he is amazing.
And agreed.
Sometimes he's like carrying the whole the whole show.
Yeah, so. What I was going to say is that I regretted at the start of it that it was this was the what I thought was going to be the first one that you saw, Sarah, because I thought, well, it's not very representative with the whole magic mushroom smoothie storyline. Yeah, and
right.
the hallucination, because that's not typical of the show. Like, that's not what it has done prior to this point either. And
but
also,
it did that so well, too, as Allison pointed out in her write-up. Like,
yes.
That's a tough needle to thread, and they managed to do it. And even the purveyor of the smoothies, like, they never go quite, like, they always stop just short of the line, like, making fun of whatever, theater people, like, that guy with his man bun and his matter of fact, like, yeah, open my mind a little bit. Like, he was really
right.
Perfect.
In his overalls.
Yes. Worst.
Yeah. But also because it had very little, almost none, just the one scene at the beginning, I think, Randall William interaction, which to me is the strongest part of the show, as you alluded to. I don't know if that was your experience in mainlining it too, Sarah.
Yeah. Mostly because, like, the other, when the focus is on the other kids, it, like, especially now, it's starting to become clear that the writers don't exactly know what else to do with them. Like, they got into sort of this squishy middle part of the season. And Kevin in particular, I feel like, is written a little differently from week to week. And the actor's really, like, I like him. I liked him on Revenge. I think he's doing his best. But when the writers can't decide from week to week whether he's, like, a completely self-involved simpleton, like Donna Martin levels of dumb
yeah.
and insensitive, or if he's just actory, and that, like, there's so much hay to be made with that whole storyline, and that he was the Manny and whatever, and they're not really doing it. He's just this, like, annoying foil sometimes. So, yeah, I don't know if everyone else is feeling frustrated with.
Well, I agree with you about Kevin, but I think, Allison, you've been a lot more generous about him. And since you watch the show more deeply than any of us do, because you have to write about it, what's your feeling about Kevin as a character?
Well, I'm afraid that I'm starting to go back to exactly what Sarah's saying. Like, in the beginning, I felt that way. And then I thought, oh, well, they're about to do something. Okay. Something's about to happen with Kevin. And then it just hasn't. Like,
yeah.
He's sort of going up the hill, and it just keeps going up. And, like, I keep thinking the big reveal is about to happen. Like, you know, the stuff that happened at the funeral that his stupid, you know, love interest now, Olivia or whatever, you know, they crash a funeral together. And I thought, oh, you know, he's getting into an emotional place where he's going to cry about his dad. And he kind of does, but then nothing else. And then he and Randall have their little, you know, Times Square fight or whatever.
That was funny,
you know,
though.
It was.
Hey, Seth Meyers.
Thank you, Seth Meyers.
That was funny.
And so that, you know, that he keeps kind of, like, stepping up to it, but then they don't take him anywhere. So, and not even with his relationship with Kate, you know, his sister, I keep thinking, like, she's going to blow up on him, like, you're this good looking one and you always got this and, you know, you're so jealous of Randall, but I'm, you know, me and all, you know, and it's like, that hasn't happened either. And I that's what I keep looking for.
What did you think about the portrayal of adoption, since you are an adoptive parent, if that's okay to say, that there's a lot talk about giving up the kid or abandonment. Like, how does that strike you as a parent on the other side of it?
It's stabbing me in the heart with 10,000 knives. Like, every episode I watch, I end up like a mess. And, like, everyone that watches it, you know, is crying through it. But I feel like that storyline, some of it, they're getting so perfectly right. And by that, I mean, they're being very honest about it, about all sides of it, like about William's side as well. Like, he was in a desperate situation. He had to make a choice and he did. And it was this awful thing, but for better or for worse, he made the choice and it put Randall on this new path in his life. And then Rebecca's, you know, I called it her irrational terror at losing her son, you know, made her make all these choices, which I think is very typical of adoption and adoptive parenting, previous to maybe now. My own situation is, I guess it's defined as semi-open. We are in a relationship with the birth mother, and we see her once a year because she lives in another state. And our story has similar elements to it, as far as Randall's goes. I mean, my daughter wasn't abandoned like that, but it was, you know, they all have these same sad stories in the beginning, of course, because it's a very sad and difficult thing.
Yeah.
So for them to be sensitive to that, I mean, I really love that. And they're getting so much of it right, I think. And I think even with the interracial adoption as well, my daughter and I are the same race, but like I can see through friends of mine who are in that experience, how it is touching those points pretty well so far also.
Sarah, what was your, you alluded to the things it's getting wrong other than Kevin, what do you think it could work on at this point?
Well, like I said, there can be some emotional Mary Sue-ing in terms of like it just being a little too perfect in Friday Night Lightsy sometimes. That's, I mean, clearly that's, if you're going to be too Friday Night Lightsy, there's like worse things to be. Totally. There's worse problems to have.
Yes.
I feel very similar with Kate's storyline also, that I feel like it's just not catching fire and that she's being backgrounded a little bit. And I'm not crazy about, like, either her only storyline is that she's big,
right,
or that needs to be just part of the fabric of her. And the actress is too good to be wasted on trying to split the difference and failing. Mm-hmm. I hope we're rid of Toby. That was, he was like, I don't know, like fat-splaining her to her. I wasn't crazy about that. I also, that's another one where like, I like the actor, but no mas, that'll do.
Yeah, he was good on the neck too.
The kid actors are all really good. But in the flashbacks, like you've stated how old they are. So you can't get away with dressing them in the wrong part of the 80s just because that part was cooler than like 1989 fashions. Like, I was there for the whole thing, and that is not what people wore.
Yeah.
So that can be a little distracting to me, but mostly it's, and then like William in the flashbacks is like in a, like an extra in coffee.
Right.
Like, what are you, what fucking year do you think it is? Is it because he's African American that it's like he's got the Superfly pimp jacket on? Like, that's weird. And please stop doing that and figure your shit out.
The afro has like a little bit too much circumference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
And but then he's immediately like in his old man wardrobe in his apartment that actually isn't that terrible. Okay, I don't even know what's going on with that. But yeah, overall, it has such a good emotional ear that these little things, I'm kind of like pretty confident that they can figure it out. I don't know if they will. Mm-hmm. But like, what happened with the Gemma thing with Jamie Gertz's daughter, that I thought that could have gone somewhere interesting. And then she gives the speech and then she gets a raise, and then I guess they couldn't afford Jamie Gertz anymore.
I don't know. I was so excited to see Jamie Gertz. You know, I thought like, okay, this is going to take it to another level, you know, to have this storyline for Kate. And I thought they would be really fun together, like in, you know, Kate's working life or whatever. But now well, first of all, we haven't seen her again. And from what I can tell, we won't.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And like, is Kate going to move to New York? These are the questions I have, because now that we've seen them all three together as adults, after, you know, it took 9 episodes to see that. So now what are they going to do?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I get that from a dramatic point of view, but also like from a character point of view, it seems like part of the blow up that we need to have between Kevin and Kate needs to be her talking about how dependent he is on her and how that is not healthy. Because that's another one where they seem like they keep dancing up to the line of it, but not actually getting there. And like, it's one thing for her to move back to the East Coast because he wants her around, but she already had made the decision of like, I need to have a life separate from you. I can't be your assistant anymore. So it would be a backslide for her to do that. Although, if part of the idea is like, well, she can't get another job if she's going to be having gastric bypass surgery and then she's going to be like out of commission, so she can't start something that she's not going to be able to finish. I mean, I guess that's the dramatic reason for why she would do it, because he's the only boss that would be understanding about it. I don't know.
Right. That's a good point. I wonder if she will do the surgery and will she do it without having the big moment with her mom that I keep thinking, like, that's another thing I'm like waiting on happening.
Yep.
So, you know, although just like thinking of somebody screaming at Mandy Moore about this is like killing me.
You do love
like
her.
I have this. Yeah.
You should talk about that.
I really
that
do.
Was one of the big appeals for you of taking this show on before we knew really anything at all about it, other than what was in the promos, was that you have a soft spot for her.
I really kind of do. And I can't even explain it, except that I feel like she's a nice person.
She does seem
which
nice.
Is really, yeah. I just read this interesting article about her own family is like, her mom left her dad for a woman and she has two brothers that are gay. And like, she's never spoken about any of that before. And now because of this show, she's feeling like she should be honest about, you know, her family that she loves and that is happy and everything. So I don't know. It made me like her even more. So now, you know, I'm dreading that moment.
Well, and seeing her burst into tears in this latest episode was really hard. I mean, she was very affecting.
Yeah.
And I think they're also doing a good job of portraying that just trap that I think mothers, like, even if you see it, you just walk right into it. Yeah. Like, you're always fucking bad cop, no matter how good copy a cop you try to be. You always get stuck being fucking bad cop.
Yes.
And my mother still complains about this, that she's just like, why? Why is it always my fault?
Yeah.
Like, why is everything I try to do always going to be wrong? Why?
That was right.
My mom too, where she was always like, why am I always the butt of the jokes that all you three get to have fun making fun of me? All I get is shit and abuse. Shit and abuse was her catchphrase.
Yeah. Why am I taking such a ration? Or a fucking ration, actually.
Why are we talking about this when there is a mother on the podcast? Hello, Elsa.
No, I was about to say I'm entering the shit and abuse phase of my life.
Yeah.
Because my daughter is 7 now.
Oh, boy.
And, oh, yeah.
It's getting to that. And she has been, like, you know how they say about little girls, like, oh, she's a daddy's girl and blah, blah, blah. No. She has been attached to me. I mean, I'm talking physically attached to me since the beginning. She didn't come out of my body, but she's been on my body ever since. And like, I tell Chris, my husband, all the time, like, when this child turns on me, as is inevitable, as is the natural way, you know, it's going to be bad. And it's, you know, it's getting there because I'm definitely on the shit and abuse cycle right now for sure.
Well,
so it's tough.
It seems like there's still lots of stuff that the show can continue to explore. I can't imagine that it won't get many more seasons after this because it's been such a monster hit for NBC. But I'm excited to keep watching it with you, Allison, and your coverage on Previously.tv.
Yay, thank you.
Wow, creepy. Hello, everybody. It's time for The Blotter Presents. Couple of wrap-up items here this week. First of all, last week it was announced that Investigation Discovery is remaking Fatal Vision, starring Scott Foley of Scandal and Felicity. A bunch of people hit me up on Twitter asking what I thought about this casting, which I guess it's fine, but the whole thing is completely extraneous.
Yeah.
Just re-release the original. Gary Cole is so good and such a good, like, physical match for Jeffrey McDonald. And I'm sort of like, why? Like, why now? Why do it as just a 2-hour movie? Like, this case, even in the court phase, was like in and out of courts for a dozen years. I'm not sure you can do it in an hour and a half sans commercials. But Yeah, like, my theory is this. Joe McGinnis died, and they were like, okay, he would never want us to redo it. And now he's dead, and we're just going to proceed. That's my theory. Is anyone in the group looking forward to this revival?
I actually haven't seen the original, which is a shame. And I feel like I would just rather see that than try to see anyone try to out Gary Cole. Because when you start with Gary Cole, stop. Like, he's the best. End of story. That's my feeling about it.
Well, and it is one of the all-time classic true crime miniseries, mm-hmm. right up there with our the music that starts this joint every time, sure. Deliberate Stranger. So,
Allison, you're a connoisseur. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are the same. You can't jam into an hour and a half something that Gary Cole did in 3 nights or however long it was. And it's just, you know, that story is so suited to the miniseries. And I don't want to see Scott Foley doing this. He's too handsome for one thing. And he's no Gary Cole.
I would like Gary Cole to jam me for 3 nights, though. Right, everybody?
Yes, oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
I sort of wish they would do like a follow-up to the original with Gary Cole, because yeah. McDonald's like 75 now, so and still trying to get out.
God, that would be brilliant.
Yeah,
God bless him. I guess I agree. That's a weird thing to say.
I agree. In other news, The Killing Season wrapped up its short season on A&E last night as we record this past Sunday. I'm not really understanding why they felt they had to cram all 8 episodes into 4 2-hour blocks.
Yeah.
I assume it's because they wanted it over well before Christmas, maybe. I mean, it's not festive. I did it on Saturday, by the way, not Sunday.
No, but Netflix dropped Making a Murderer on, what was it, December 21st or something last year? And
you're right,
they made out like Santa Bandits with that. I did see on social media that Tara, you and Dave were watching The Killing Season, which was a little surprising to me. That's not usually your weekend relaxing jam. What'd you guys think of it?
It was well done. It was the twists that it took were like fascinating and frustrating. But I will say we had people staying with us in our guest house, and when they record stuff, it shows up on like the DVR list, pulls from both of the DVRs. So I could see the stuff that she was recording. It was like Dateline NBC, a whole bunch of Law and Order Criminal Intent. So I went out at one point and found her. It was like, which one of you is the true crime fan? Even though I knew it would be her, and it was. So I was like, go check out The Killing Season. I like downloaded all the ones that were available on demand. And I know she watched 4 of them before they left in like a day. So I hooked someone else on it. I feel like that's paying it forward for The Killing Season, getting another fan. But yeah, it was more my thing than Dave's. So I was surprised that he stuck with it. What did you think, Dave?
Well, first of all, it confirmed all my darkest suspicions about truck drivers.
That's a good point.
Which is really where the show ended up. It's like truck drivers be bad. I would say that I enjoyed the show up until the last episode, where I feel like they were auditioning for a new season about Cleveland or something. Like, it seemed really, that seemed like the beginning of a next attempt and not this. Like, it seemed a little weird. I thought that they had sort of ended their line and then they started this new thing about Cleveland, which wasn't even like so much a summary by example. It just seemed like almost like a backdoor pilot for you know what they hope would be a second season of something. But beyond that, I thought that it was well done. I was fascinated by how they behaved when they were just walking up to somebody's door and knocking on it and asking them questions. Like, how do you approach that?
Yeah.
You know, especially when you don't know whether this person is going to be dangerous or not, or just like, you know, are they still
be offended
grieving
by the implication?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I thought that too, how much they seem to be like insulated by having a camera on them, that they're like, well, they're not going to do anything while they're being filmed, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. But yeah,
although no, there was one episode where they were talking about like, okay, if we have to like sprint out of here, here's the escape route.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yikes.
And they had like a security detail they hired. And it was interesting, once in a while they would become part of the story where they would, you know, kind of give out the options and give their opinion on how safe or unsafe this current situation could be or how it could break bad or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. The transparency or appearance of transparency about it, I thought was a good touch that they really like sort of opened up everything and showed their whole process. So I know it was for you, Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah. They sort of implied, I did an interview with the filmmakers, Zeman and Mills, on previously.tv. That's in the Killing Season section. I'd like to interview them again now that I've watched the whole thing. But I got the sense that there were things that, like, they wouldn't normally do as in terms of, like, the construction of the thing and the voiceover, and that the network may have insisted, like, you actually have to hold people's hands a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And my sense was that they didn't actually necessarily believe that all of these groups of murders in different communities are related, but that in order to give it a through line for the network, so they could like hang it on something that's like Daytona Beach, New Mexico, it's all a giant conspiracy. Like, it isn't. Like, there's bad people everywhere. That's all that is. But I thought for that they did a good job.
And did you watch it, Allison? Sorry.
I recorded it. I have not watched it yet, but now I want to even more.
Sorry, I thought you were done, Sarah. I interrupted you mid-sentence. Apologies.
Yeah, no, I'm just sort of hoping that they have like more to say that they can say on the record about the like what the story seemed to want them to do versus what the network and possibly Alex Gibney were needing them to do. So, yeah, but it was a good series. I'm glad that they got to do it, and I hope... I totally see what you're saying, Dave, about the backdoor pilot thing, but I kind of hope that that was that and then it gets picked up and they get more to do, because I like their true crime style. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah,
agreed.
Yep.
My tiny triumph for this week is a follow-up to my years-old Twitter hashtag, movie or bowel movement. came up because Adam Grossworth has like that time hop thing or whatever, something that tells him, you know, anniversaries of things. And it's like 5 years since movie or bowel movement. So I started TV or bowel movement a couple days ago on Twitter. And here are some of the best entries by myself and others. Riptide, also Ripper Street, Thundercats, Press Your Luck, The Great British Bake Off.
Oh.
American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Knott's Landing.
Yeah.
60 Minutes.
Knott's Landing.
Oh.
Game of Thrones. The Big Bang Theory. Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Stranger Things. Murphy Brown. Suddenly Susan.
Murphy Brown.
Call the Midwife. Rectify.
That was mine. I was very proud of it.
Chicago Fire. Emergency. God. Bob's Burgers. Inside Amy Schumer. Twin Peaks.
Now.
MASH. Jeff Drake added Regular Show, which I thought was very funny. Full House. Watch What Happens Live. Chips. Beat the Clock. My favorite that I did, Match Game.
Yep.
Wipeout. Too Close for Comfort. The Oblongs. Under the Dome. Blackish. Grimm. Meet the Press.
Yeah.
The Grinder. Mm-hmm. For Sarah D. Bunting, Unsolved Mysteries.
Thank you.
Probably my grossest one, Grease Live. Tour of Duty. The Strain. 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. Gomer Pyle. The Thick of It. Hardball with Chris Matthews. Dinner for Five. And finally, Sliders. And Tara, you had one.
I did. Well, I want to also mention, since it wasn't in your list, Omar, past guest of the show, Omar Gayaga, and I, the same minute, both posted Catastrophe. But my tiny triumph.
I also enjoyed your Below Deck.
Oh, thank you.
I thought that was good. Thank you.
Rectify was the third one I thought of. And even as I was typing it, I was like, I really should just stop after this because I'm not going to top it. And I didn't. But anyway, my tiny triumph was that I posted Pickle and Peanut. Thank you. And the creator of the show, Joel Tressel, retweeted it, said something like "worlds colliding." I forget what he actually said, but yeah, that was very proud of that one.
And I have another goodness. Tiny triumph that comes from Alyssa. She writes, "I've been a huge fan ever since the podcast premiered back in 2010. When the show has a week off, I listen to these old episodes. And today I was listening to episode 9 from Mark 1, which is the introduction of Sarah D. Bunting into our lives.
Aww.
It
Aww.
Premiered on December 5th, 2010.
Hey!
As we record, 6 years. So I just wanted to pass along a happy anniversary to Sarah. Thanks for your sense of humor and perspective. I'm a huge fan, and I'm so glad you became a podcast regular."
Aww.
Aww.
Happy anniversary, so Sarah. Much.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara Ariano.
I want to talk just briefly about Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, which I, like the rest of America, I guess, watched all of over the Thanksgiving weekend. It was fine. I don't know if I would have liked it better if I had rewatched some of those, like the first when the show was actually on, like any of the episodes from the first 7 seasons, because there's some stuff that is a little problematic now, more so than it was in 2000 when the show premiered. I mean, like the whole thing with Emily's maid and that she can't understand them and stuff. Like, first of all, the fact that it was the same actress playing the maid in a wig and glasses that is Gypsy, the town mechanic. Rose Abdu played both of those roles and was speaking like some kind of crazy pidgin Spanish that apparently was not Spanish at all. And I get that, like, that was an element of the show the first time through, that if it hadn't continued, people would have been annoyed. But, like, maybe people should be annoyed, because that's weird and fucked up. Like, that's not okay. And Rory, I don't know if she was always this much of a pain in the ass, but wow, she is terrible in these 4 episodes. She is the most incompetent freelance writer there ever was. First of all, like, whatever, she wrote something for in the universe of the show, she wrote a talk of the town for The New Yorker, like, great. But then she seems to think that's all she needs to do, and then she can just, like, walk into other offices with her talk of the town and be like, assign me stuff, which is not how it works at all. Like, has a meeting at Vanity Fair and then is, like, sitting there waiting for them to tell her what to do. Like, first of all, why do you even have this meeting? Second of all, come in with, like, 10 ideas, you fucking nitwit. Like, I know there was a million think pieces after this came out from all of the journalists, like, complaining about what a bad journalist she is, but she is bad. She's also a suck. She's not a relatable character at all. And Luke and Lorelai have never had chemistry, and they still don't. In fact, having all this time off, they have even less. They have negative chemistry, and whatever they did to Scott Patterson's hairline is a war crime. Like, just let the man be bald. He's fucking old. Like, it looked like it was colored in with, like, you know, those shoe polish things that you get when there's a yes. brown nick in your shoes, and it's like a waxy, like, pastel crayon.
It's like that episode of Frasier where his dad puts
yes.
shoe polish on his
yes. head. Yes, yeah. It was so bad. Like, every scene he was in where he didn't have his hat on, I was, like, crying for him on the inside. I don't even like that guy. So I guess I had a lot of problems with Gilmore Girls, but I don't know. People seemed to like it, question mark. I couldn't really tell what the kind of critical mass of opinion on it was in particular. People were so excited about it that I imagine there was a lot of them that felt that it lived up to their expectations.
For a show like this, it has to be, you have to, like, come back to it in a couple months. I feel like yeah. it's the Muppets movie of Netflix. Like, everybody's like, oh, the Muppets are back! Muppets! And then, like, later, like, you know what? This isn't as good as I thought it
yeah.
was. This isn't the triumphant return of the Muppets. It was just okay.
Yeah. I agree. Mm-hmm. I thought, but I will say, Nick Reinwald Jones, who wrote 3 of the 4 pieces on the season, Roger Cormier very ably wrote up Summer. Nick's sort of closing thoughts on this, which I thought were very smart and correct, were that these episodes proved that Emily Gilmore is the real true protagonist of the show, and she always has been, and she's other than the racial stuff, she is the best. I guess I shouldn't just slough that off, but I feel like it's more that the show is racist than that she is racist. That's a separate discussion to have, I guess, but Kelly Bishop is a queen, and she was excellent in these episodes too. And Nick's sort of exploration of what her journey was a pleasure to read and a great capper of the season. You can find that on previously.tv. Also on previously.tv, my coverage of the much anticipated by me A&E limited series Leah Remini: Scientology in the Aftermath. It premiered last week. I'll be writing about it every week at previously.tv. If you're a Scientology, I don't even know, not fan, but if you're fascinated by Scientology and like especially by stories from people who've left the church, this is 100% for you. Some of it in the first episode I felt was a little bit old hat. Like if you've seen Alex Gibney's movie on HBO, like, or read Going Clear, a lot of this will be familiar to you. But I'm hoping that as the first episode just had to sort of be, as Sarah said, hand-holding for the people that are not, you know, super consumers of Scientology stories, because the rest of it is going to be Leah Remini, who famously left the church several years ago, interviewing other people and about their experiences. And so I can't wait to watch all 8 episodes of this joint.
Allison.
Okay, I want to talk for a second about Search Party on TBS.
Yeah.
I watched it. They dropped the whole series over the Thanksgiving holiday to, I guess, allow for binging. I don't know, which I thought was kind of a weird idea, but I don't know. I've just finished it, and I really loved it. And I found it to be really weirdly charming in a way that similar shows, I'm thinking particularly of Girls, are not.
Yeah.
Mostly due to Alia Shawkat, mm-hmm. if I'm saying that right.
I think so.
She is grade A adorable. I mean, she just, and so just great in this. She plays Dory, an aimless young woman in New York who happens to see a flyer for a girl who's gone missing. And she recognizes the photo as this girl, Chantal, who she was acquainted with in college, but she has nothing else going on in her life and kind of makes this her thing and throws herself into it, kind of. She has this milquetoast boyfriend that she drags along behind her, and two completely self-centered friends who almost steal the show because they are very funny. And
they're very Jack and Karen from Will and Grace. John Early.
They are.
So
they
funny.
Are. But you know, even like meaner and yeah. more absurd. And they sort of all get wrapped up in this. And, you know, it's not a comedy or a drama or whatever. But it feels more like a comedy. But then these mystery twists are really on point at the end of every episode. And the thing wraps up in a way that just like is darker than you expect. And still so just, I was riveted by the mm-hmm. last episode. And I really loved it. And then there are some incredible like small appearances, like Parker Posey shows up and, the neighbor of the two main characters is really funny and crazy, and I just really enjoyed it. You can watch it for free on TBS's website, although I think you have to like watch the whole thing through or something. Like I cannot figure out their website.
Really? Oh,
yeah, it's like some weird situation with that. But
they probably have
it's
an
also
app
on demand
for like Roku or whatever at or
yeah,
Apple TV or what have you. Yeah, I recorded it as it was airing all last week. I liked it too. And I also liked that I won't say anything about the ending because we want people to watch it, but I liked how it wrapped up the mystery in a very ambiguous way, I thought.
Right.
Not ambiguous about the outcome or the story, like that does come to a satisfying conclusion if that's something people are worried about because of the climate that we're in. You do get an answer in the season finale, the killing, but
yes.
But I liked how it kept the story as a story, like as a TV show.
Yeah. I wondered if they were intending to go to a second season or mm-hmm. whatever, what it could be. Like I'm not sure where they could go. Well, I mean, there are ideas. I don't know. But like for Dory, I want to know more about whatever happens to her next. And we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also, as a small plug, as you listen to this last week or whatever, Mariah's World premiered on E, about Mariah Carey and her fascinating and glamorous life. I watched the first episode and did a new show fact sheet on it for previously.tv. And I, you know, it was terrible, but I loved it.
That's all you can hope for a show like this, right? Like, no one's expecting it to be great.
Yeah. I mean, these shows, they don't give me what I want, which is I want the inside baseball on what on her life as a musician. And like, I'll watch a docuseries on her putting a tour together. Mm-hmm. But of course, they had to, you know, make it all dramatic. And there are clear characters that were written in. You know, there's this, her whole crew, which like numbers in the thousands or something. Like, there's all these dancers and makeup people and her manager and everything. But then they throw in like this assistant, this little blonde white girl who like is completely useless and useless like from the jump. Like, in the interview, the manager, who is this bulldog lady, is like, and there's no crying in my office and blah blah, and the girl like almost starts crying like as she's sitting there, and like she's really stupid, and they're I hate to even like watch anymore because of that, because I really just want to know, I want to see Mariah singing, and like I want her to, like, they showed her a little bit how she arranges music with her music director, and I just she's so incredibly naturally talented that that's enough. I don't know why they have to create all this nonsense, but anyway, they obviously have.
I know why. America loves nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be airing all this week. I'm sure they'll be rerunning it ad nauseum. It was also on Bravo last night. They premiered it simultaneously on both those channels. So look for it. I'm sure you can find it.
Sarah D. Bunte.
Speaking of Bravo, Below Deck, and my Below Deck rankings will be wrapping up this week with the season finale, and they are choosing again not to do a reunion show. Like, I understand that maybe everyone over at Bravo is getting a little reunion fatigue, like Real Housewives reunions that go on one third the length of the season. I think one year New Jersey had like three proper reunion episodes and then two like cut scenes things like that. Okay, that's fine. Like, it's the holidays and we'd all rather be watching the Great Holiday Baking Show. And that's, I get it. But no reunion at all?
Yeah.
This has actually been a pretty good season. But I think once they got rid of former hair model, senior deckhand Trevor and his binge drinking problem, there wasn't quite enough conflict, and I could see that either, you know, people didn't want to come back for the reunion or they just didn't think it would be worth watching. But they're never worth watching. That's not the point. We expect a reunion. Give us a reunion. And also, don't leave it up to poor Captain Lee to announce it on his blog. The man has enough problems. Anyway, I've covered the entire season and am covering Below Deck Mediterranean and Below Deck on the, you know, slopes of Whistler called Timber Creek Lodge. So, yes, all your Below Deck-ish needs.
Let me understand this. Below Deck reunions are sort of like fruitcake from your aunt. You don't really want to have it, but if you don't get it, you feel slighted.
Yeah, okay. Because then you can't make fun of it. It's about consistency.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My plug, speaking of fruitcakes, is for my Dinner for Five show-o-matics. That's correct. I have resuscitated the count how many times over the course of Dinner for Five Jon Favreau mentioned that he was left on the cutting room floor in Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle. So far, we're up to one.
Mm-hmm.
The scene was a sex scene. I'd forgotten about that. Anyway, there are also categories like smoking at the table, are guests drunk, and so on. As you're listening to this, I will have a new one up today, Tuesday.
Nice.
Peter Falk nearly punching Vince Vaughn in the face because he won't stop interrupting him. Yes, you're right. That was two separate episodes. This is the first one. It's really fun. All the Dinner for Fives are on, pretty much all of them are on YouTube. I really wish they'd reboot this show in a proper fashion with actual Favreau. Until they do, we're just going to have to muddle along with the version from the first Bush term in office. And you can find all of that at previously.tv.
All right. Westworld wrapped up its first season. We talked about it when it premiered. I think everybody was so-so on it. I was a little worried that it was just going to be another J.J. Abrams mystery box television show. Avec HBO boobs.
Avec.
Yes. As I know, it's fancy.
You have to say it in French when you're talking about premium cable.
Yeah, exactly.
Au français.
La la.
And certainly it is a mystery box show, at least in the first season. I know nobody else here has watched it, so I'm just talking to myself.
I've passively consumed it.
Yeah. But I will say, despite some tone problems and some just general, like, HBO's making another show for that kind of person who loves HBO shows show and all the things you get with it. Like,
sure.
Here's some boobs. Why? Because you love boobs.
Yep.
Although a lot of the nudity was so matter of fact that you become numb to nudity now. I started walking around town in the nude because nudity means nothing to me now that I've watched Westworld. I do appreciate
that was a Hawaii thing, not a HBO saturation thing.
It's both.
Your mahalo is showing.
Aloha clothes.
I do appreciate that a lot of the mysteries that they introduced have been wrapped up. And by the way, if you haven't watched Westworld, skip this segment. They're, for the most part, I think I get the feeling that they're setting the show up for a different hook in season two.
Well, there was something about a park one sign, right? That suggests there will be some other parks.
Well, within the park, there's other like worlds. So I'm not quite sure what that.
Oh, right. This one was racist too. I forgot.
Yeah. So there's Westworld. They've shown stuff from a Roman world. I believe they've said there's a medieval world and they introduced samurai world last night. Hints of it. The part in the middle where it was sort of like, who's the robot, who isn't, when that started to come in. Like, I got this bad, who are the final five Cylons from Battlestar Galactica vibe from it, where I didn't really care because, like, in Battlestar Galactica, it really made no difference who those final five Cylons were. It was just this meaningless mystery box thing. It really didn't matter who it was. It was just like, you want to guess? Have a guess. You know, place a bet in Vegas on who's the final five Cylons. What this show is doing differently, and which I enjoy, is that they're drawing a nice line with their narrative and narrative structure. Like, there's two big items in season one. There was the introduction of multiple timelines. Part of the story takes place in the past. Part of it takes place in the present. And the other big kind of mystery thing was the identity of William, who is McPoyle. I don't even know the actor's name. What's the actor's name?
Jimmy Simpson.
And his character ends up being the same character as the Man in Black.
Ed Harris.
Yeah, Ed Harris's character. But these two mysteries weren't impossible to figure out ahead of the show revealing them. And no matter whether...
Were or weren't.
Were not.
Okay.
I don't think that it wasn't like Lost.
A lot
Lost.
Of people guessed that, though.
It wasn't like Lost, where shit just happens out of the blue and it's a surprise because there was no other way to, you know, know it. All these things were knowable. There was hints and, you know, you can kind of see some of it coming. Or Bernard being a robot.
Right.
You know, these were all things that were not telegraphed in a very obvious way, but it let you either consume the show at your pace or the show's pace.
Right.
Either way, I found the reveals to be pretty fulfilling in a way that usually anything with J.J. Abrams' hands on it, I find frustrating.
Yeah.
So I have hope that with season two, with most of the who's who and what are everybody's motivations sort of settled in a broad stroke kind of way, that season two will sort of take it in a new direction. And that direction might be, you know, kind of Rise of the Machines sort of storyline, or, you know, corporate interests versus civil rights kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting to me. And I get the feeling that they're setting themselves up for a kind of a minor reset, because if it's just this every year, no thank you. But like, they did a great deal of world building in season one, and I do appreciate that. It became much richer as the season went along from what I thought the first episode was presenting. Mm-hmm. And I know HBO really wants this to be the next Game of Thrones. I think Nick said it. It's interesting. It's compelling, but it's never going to be a Game of Thrones for HBO.
Right.
But we'll see where they go next season. I'm hopeful. I'm pretty bummed that they killed off Anthony Hopkins' character.
Or did they? What if that wasn't the real Ford?
That's true. I was thinking that maybe he made himself a little buddy, robot buddy.
Yeah.
But also I get the feeling that that would be, you know, a nice little budget line item they can cross off. But
yeah,
we'll see. I hope he's still in it. Great cast. They're pretty good. I don't really like Dolores that much. But
yeah.
She's not getting a lot to work with. But her character in season two is woke.
Right.
So, you know, perhaps she'll be able to inject a more genuine emotion without being the sort of puzzled child of the show.
I will say, when I started seeing promos for this, I thought this is not a show for me, and I was right. And I watched the second one and thought, well, that's enough. I don't need to watch this anymore. And after that, I saw bits and pieces of it, you know, because there were times where I was like reading Twitter or whatever. So I told Dave, I don't care, you can turn it on. And it seemed like there was still a lot of killing ladies, and raping and stuff, which is what turned me off of it in the first place. Like the idea of cruelty tourism was not appealing to me. So if you are like me, but you still would like to see a story on TV about androids and, you know, awakening to their consciousness, I would recommend Humans.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Although,
thank you. Jeez, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was deep in my reply to you, which I feel like season two is a bit of a sophomore slump for Humans.
In Humans? Yeah. We have flown to England and we've watched the first four. Six have aired so far. There, we have not watched the latest two yet.
It's a slow burn, but I'm not learning anything new. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, what's more interesting to me about Humans than Westworld 2, other than, I mean, Humans has violence against androids as well. And women and whatever. But it puts it in a real world context, mm-hmm. which is more interesting to me than the sort of the theme park elements. Like, how would it actually be to live in a world where robots that are more or less, I mean, they're distinguishable from humans, but like how would that change your life as a person if you weren't someone who had $40,000 a day to spend to go to Westworld?
Westworld deals with video game consequences.
Right.
Right. You know, it's like the Grand Theft Auto of that sort of tourism that they're envisioning.
Sure.
Whereas Humans is, you know, curling up with a book and reading about, so, you know, like, you know, speculative fiction, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It like, is.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. Right. That's my thoughts on Westworld. Sorry that I couldn't bounce that off anybody, but all my opinions are correct. All right. It is time for a Nonak. That is the evil mirror universe twin of the canon. The worst, terrible, most egregious episodes of an otherwise quality show. Today we have a submission from Matthew Siegel, which we'll play in a second. But I just want to invite everybody to submit their own canon submissions, their Nonak submissions, or the I Am Not a Crackpot theories. Just record your audio, leave a little bit of silence at the beginning and the end of it, and send it to ehg@previously.tv so we can play it on the show. Everybody who submits something and is used on the show gets a free extra hot great mini topic of their choosing. And with that, take it away, Matthew.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. My name is Matthew Siegel from Tampa, Florida, and my Nonak submission is Season 9, Episodes 23 and 24 of How I Met Your Mother, Last Forever, Part 1 and 2. How I Met Your Mother, or Him-Yim for short, was a comedy about Ted Mosey explaining to his children the events leading up to how he met their mom. In the early years, it was a funny and inventive show which used its narrative structure to explore relationships and friendship while juggling an overarching plot with clues and foreshadowing of a titular mother. However, the creators of the show proved to be too clever by half, as they conceived an ending to the series when they first started and felt bound to never waver or depart from their original plan. That refusal to change would prove to be their downfall, as the realization of their 9-year-old ending led directly to the worst episodes of the series finale. The last and final season of the show concerns Robin and Barney's wedding, an event the series had spent at least 2 seasons building towards, with the final season taking place entirely in the weekend leading up to the event. The series finale starts with Ted tearfully saying goodbye to his friends. These farewells play off 9 years' worth of familiarity the audience has with the characters. It would be a touching send-off. In a grim omen of what the rest of the episode will be concerned with, these goodbyes are rendered mute within two scenes, as Ted sees the mother and decides not to leave. While the show tries to lampshade the swerve, pointing out that something that's stupid doesn't make it not stupid, the finale then gets to work really salting the field of goodwill. Lily and Marshall fare the best, mostly because their entire existence gets boiled down to them having more kids and being the peanut gallery for the others. By the midpoint of the first episode, Barney and Robin have broken up. The joke's on the viewer for being invested in them as a couple. Robin's anger over the divorce and her lingering feelings for Ted cause her to drift away from the group, a familiar trip to a well the series had gone to before. Barney resorts to being the same gross horn dog he was at the start of the show, although now 15 years older. Thankfully, he knocks up a woman that we never see and has a baby girl, which results in him becoming a decent person for the last 15 minutes to the series, because I guess we should have been rooting for the mistake baby all along. Ted and the mother fall in love, have two kids, and then get married. The finale shows glimpses of what could have been if the mother had been integrated more into the series, and Christian Milioti shows great chemistry with the rest of the cast. Then the show offs her with the sickness and death only alluded to in the final season, and proceeds to reveal that the entire point of the show hasn't actually been Ted telling the story of their meeting, but rather that he still wants to bone his kid's Aunt Robin. The kids give him their enthusiastic consent to get over their dead mom and go have sex, again, with their aunt. The final image is a callback to Ted and Robin's original love story, rather than anything to do with the actual mother of the title, and is naturally followed by reminding us what the title is. This is the ending the creators had written and filmed at the very start of the show, the ending they stuck with even though the following 9 seasons had rendered it a cruel joke. Now before I proceed, I want to acknowledge some counter-arguments for including this in the Nonak. I will admit that as the show wore on, you could really feel the writers running out of clock. And in fact, the finale does have some great moments. Neil Patrick Harris is acting with the baby girl is touching, and almost no other episode of the show has a moment as great as the actual meeting between Ted and Tracy the mother, which is the peak of the show's long memory and justifies the layering and foreshadowing that had been the series' strong point up to that point. However, I submit that instead of saving the finale, the good moments actually damn it. Whenever it manages to stumble onto something that triggers a joy signal, it then follows it up with something so bad that the pleasure receptor is forever burnt out, never to feel again. The finale is the logical and frustrating endpoint for the worst aspects of the show, which thought that misdirection was a substitute for storytelling, and that if an ending on its own was good enough, it could rest on shitty foundations. NPH might knock the baby scene out of the park, but then you realize that he broke up with Robin because he couldn't handle her being successful, and apparently just needed a baby, which Robin couldn't and wouldn't have, to fix him. Ted and Robin reuniting might have made sense at some point, but as the show dragged on, the writer's delaying tactic showed that she and Ted were toxic together. And once you realize that the entire series has been about the mother being a brood mare for Ted, you start to question the entire point of the show. Thanks to this episode, I've never been able to revisit the series, a series that I once loved. For being so bad that it poisons the happy memories of an entire show, I feel that it is more than qualified to be enshrined in the Nonak. Thank you, and love to the show.
Man.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I hope my eyebrows grow back someday after
clap.
Burn them down.
Thank you, Matthew. And by the way, Matthew does earn himself an extra credit for his troubles. That is an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Can't wait to see what he submits. So you may have noticed usually in these submissions, we insert clips from the shows, and I didn't this week because I just felt like this episode, and I think his argument was very succinct, but this episode basically is a stand-in for 3 major violations of the viewer show creator compact of 1952 and onwards, and the 3 things are this. The weaseling out ending of the showrunners having their cake and eating it too, by having How I Met Your Mother, and then the mother dies, and then Robin can go back in. That's number 1. Number 2, the rug sweep of Robin and Barney's relationship.
Yes.
And number 3, mm-hmm. This episode is a stand-in for the general long, painful draw of the conceit of the series. That, you know, they suffered from just stretching it out way too long, relationships bouncing in and out a la Ross and Rachel on Friends, and that this series had a shelf life and they got greedy and extended it well beyond their shelf life to the point where when they did wrap it up, nobody really cared. And that the payoff for how long people waited was just not there. And that is my very succinct argument for why this definitely belongs in the Nonak Tara.
Well, I have a different perspective on this because How I Met Your Mother is on every day on FX, and I usually just put it on while I'm working, because it's an okay enough show that it, you know, acts as the radio when while I'm waiting for Law and Order to come on, which is usually later in the day. But it's so I watched this episode, these two episodes recently, and I also have watched all of that final season, which, by the way, the fact that this show got to season 9 is absurd and terrible.
Also, the final season was a terrible, like, concepts season.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, which is as Matthew alludes, the entire final season takes place over Barney and Robin's wedding weekend. So there's like lots of like, you know, flash arounds and whatever, like they, you know, figure out ways to get them out of this bed and breakfast where they all are on occasion to like tell other stories and stuff. But still, that is like, it's a 24 episode gross self-indulgence of like playing out the string in such a cynical way. It's like, really, the whole season is a fuck you, honestly, like irrespective of where it ends. But there are, while I agree with him that this having your cake and eating it too is appalling, and that one of the things that made the show interesting from the beginning was that you end that first episode thinking that Robin is the mother, and then he says that was your Aunt Robin. Like, okay, well, where is the story going to go? And then, you know, it's like Lost, where, you know, people... the fans were like, they're in purgatory, and then the creators had to be like, no, they're not. Okay, fine, they are. So they got to such a more interesting place with Barney and Robin, and like that was really hard work for them, for the writers, to earn that relationship and have it make sense, and they did. And then for it, as Matthew says, for it to get undone in the first 15 minutes is real bullshit. But still. There are definitely worse episodes in that final season than this finale, which I thought had some sweet moments. So I'm not sure how I'm going to vote, but I'm going to throw it over to our guest, Allison Lohuff.
I have also been on the fence. I watched them both again today. And I remember when this show started, I was so invested in the concept to a degree, although I just don't have the love for Josh Radnor very much.
No, he was always the worst.
Yes. And what is that show he was on recently, where he played the Civil War doctor?
Mercy Street. I watched that too.
Oh, God. It was so bad. The moments of that I saw, and I was just like, oh, Mosby. Anyway, so like I enjoy watching this in reruns too every once in a while. And it has the, you know, the laughs, whatever, are still some of them pretty good. But when this last season started, I remember watching the first 4 episodes and just being like, what? Like, it just kept going on and on. And like Tara said, it was just like, you know, a huge F you to everyone who had stuck with it, whoever those people were, because I was definitely in and out. But again, I also thought these last 2 episodes had a couple of sweet moments. And as I was watching today, I realized, you know, they're genuinely crying, you know, when they're doing all these farewells that they had to do, the multiple goodbyes that they are doing throughout this timeline back and forth. Like, you can see like that there's real emotion between these actors, and like that is very touching, I think. And I don't know, it reminded me of some of the things about the show that I really liked, but it was also a pain in the ass. Still, I'm on the fence.
Okay, Sarah D. Bunting.
Well, I'm also on the fence. I'll get to why in terms of my vote. I'm not on the fence about what a piece of fucking garbage this two episode block was. Based on what I saw in this, How I Met Your Mother is everything that I dislike about sitcoms. There's, you know, Neil Patrick Harris, and maybe this was like charming in the beginning, I don't know, and will not be finding out. But it's like this creaky print, like, oh, we're still in the bar at whatever, even though we have kids. Like, I don't, what? Like, what New York is this where you can just, like, did you tie your baby to the crib to go out and have a pint with your friends? Like, really? The pacing is not good. The jokes feel pretty forced. Neil Patrick Harris is like rapidly becoming someone that I'm like angered by the sight of at this point. And then like this idea that, first of all, not knowing really any of the backstory, it really seemed like they sold out feminism with this Robin thing, mm-hmm. this Robin storyline, that I was just like, and why is she the only certified badass in the group? Well, I guess Jason Segel's character is sort of a badass, but they make him such a whatever, like crying in the shower guy.
Yeah.
Figure of fun that you can't take that seriously either. And then Robin's like, I'm sorry, I travel all the time and I'm a success. Fuck that. Come on. I know it's a sitcom, but Jesus Christ. And then it's like, oh, well, I guess we'll just get a divorce because being apart is hard. So you get, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's the fact that I never watched the show, but I did edit many of our esteemed colleague Omar Gayaga's fine coverage of said show as it was twitching and gasping its last. And the finale, like, I just remember his tone in his writing was so exhausted.
Yeah.
The whole season, but especially at the end, that he was like, it had been going on so long that he no longer had the strength to be furious.
Yeah, totally.
But it's like, bitch, your show is called How I Met Your Mother. What kind of blue French horn? So I'm sure that this is actually not the worst episode or block of episodes in the series. And I have no context for whether or not it was generally an otherwise good show. Again, won't be finding out. But because this is in the Hall of Fame of fuck you shitty endings, I think I have to put it in the Nonac.
Yeah.
Because it's like offensive. It's almost offensive, like how bad it is that they're like, psych, and they thought it was cute. Like, gross. Yeah. So that's how I feel. Boo.
Okay. So it's time for the vote, but I just want to say that it feels like we might be having a little philosophical Nonac disagreement here versus the quality of the episode itself versus if this episode can be Nonacable because it represents everything that this show did poorly
right.
throughout its series, but especially at the end.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Sarah's point is...
It's a scapegoat for everybody's late series issues with this show.
Yeah, but Sarah's point is well taken, which is that that it's so famous for its fuck you-iness.
Yeah.
That can't be denied.
Yeah.
I just want to answer a couple of things that Sarah said about Robin, which is this series already sold her out by first establishing her as a character who didn't want kids, and then later having her find out she like physically was infertile, and then having her really be sad about it, which like I can understand that even if you didn't want kids, having the avenue definitely closed off, as it were, not by your choice would still be emotional, but still it was already like she didn't want kids. Like this would not be a trauma that would ruin the relationship she was in at that moment, probably. And also, like, as you said, in the whole business of the finale that like she's finally gotten success in her career and this is the thing that ends her relationship now, like, fuck off. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, Tara Ariano.
I still am not going to vote it into the Nonac because despite the badness of the storyline, the episode still had enough like cute moments between Tracy and Ted that it kind of redeemed it for me. And like, I know that's what everyone had been waiting to see. And if it had ended on them, like that they meet and then that's the end, like we wouldn't have gotten to see that. And Kristen Milioti is so cute in this role that she actually makes Josh Radnor appealing, which I never thought would have been possible, but congratulations to her. So I'm gonna vote no.
All right, I'm gonna vote yes, and as a counterpoint, I do feel like this episode is a great stand-in for all our gripes about the series. And you know, I didn't really think it was a great episode anyways, but yeah, I do agree with Sarah that this is a big F you to everybody who's watched this show. And, you know, we're going to send this goat out into the desert and let it die. So I'm going to vote yes for Nonac. Sarah D. Bunting.
Even if I weren't going to vote yes anyway, sending the goat out into the desert is really delightful and would have changed my mind. But yes, I believe it goes in the Nonac.
All right. So that means this is up to Allison's vote.
As
you know, a tie is a no vote. So Allison, let us know. Where are you thinking?
Okay. I, was on the fence, but I feel convinced by Sarah's scathing rant.
Yes.
And although I do agree with Tara that the mother was Christine Milioti, is that it?
Yeah, Kristen.
Kristen, right.
Yeah,
adorable.
She was good.
She was very charming when I watched it again today. I was reminded of that as well. I really liked that. But I'm putting it in. I'm voting yes.
All right. Ooh, can't be mad.
So, guys. How high your
blue French horn?
Oh, God.
Season. We have two episodes. We got episode 23.
Claire.
And then, after that, episode 24.
Oh, God.
Collectively, episode 23 and 24 are known by the title. Last forever.
Oh, I've so been there.
We hereby declare How I Met Your Mother, Season 9, Episodes 23 and 24, Last Forever. You are now in, and forever, the Extra Hot Great No Doubt.
Oh, Jesus.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
Oh, God.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has the winner.
I do. It is Claire Arnold, known to you as Kathleen Robertson, who has sold an adaptation of the 1995, I believe, movie starring Kevin Spacey and Frank Whaley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Swimming with Sharks, scathing Hollywood satire that I very much enjoyed, and I think it's really fantastic that it's getting, I think it's going to be a limited series. Mm-hmm. If you had been like, so Kathleen Robertson sold a limited series too. What is it? I would literally never have guessed this. And if you just told me the swimming with sharks part, I never would have guessed her. And I just think it's really cool. Like it turns out maybe she's a secret badass, and I like that. Yep. I like being pleasantly surprised by people.
Yep.
Loser of the week.
Loser of the week, Masters of Sex. The Masters and Johnson dramedy, I guess, on Showtime has fucked its last. It's ending after four seasons. I was the only one, I think, who watched it all the way through. And there was actually some really interesting stuff this season. But, you know, I can't be mad that it's ending. Poor Michael Sheen deserves better. And yes, better than this and better than being a half a robot in that fucking Passengers thing. That was so weird. Yeah.
For me, he's always going to be Gangway. Foot cycle.
Yeah. Gangway for Foot Cycle. And the drunk tennis commentator in that HBO thing last year with Andy Samberg. Yeah. Jon Snow, that was so funny. If you haven't watched it, 7 Days in Hell, it's on HBO, so go. It's so good and so dumb. So yeah. Sorry, Masters of Sex.
Speaking of 7 Days in Hell, I have an interesting question. Do you know what time it is? It's game time. All right, everybody. This is the 11th game time of the season.
Woo!
Tara and Sarah both need a win to clinch the season. As a reminder, season ends when somebody hits 5. And value guests are behind with a couple of points. Today, we are playing... Hot Potato Primetime
Tara.
Laughs Edition from Martin Van Klompenberg.
Ooh,
earns himself an extra credit. An extra ta-ting! Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Also, Martin Van Klompenberg, you have the best name ever.
Yep, agreed.
Truly.
So today there are 14 rounds in Hot Potato, and the point is given to the last person standing in each round. Okay. The last person standing goes last in the next round after that, right? Okay.
Goes
so
last.
If you win round one.
Okay.
Goes first.
Yeah, sorry, goes first.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep.
Okay, so let's see who Picky is going to choose to go first.
We will start with valued guests.
All right, so that means Allison, Sarah, Tara is our order. Are we ready to play?
We'll see.
Primetime Laughs Edition, okay. Round one. Academy Award nominees who have appeared on 30 Rock, 28 possible answers.
Boy.
Allison, go.
Alec Baldwin.
Susan Sarandon.
Sarah.
Oh, sorry.
Say Susan Sarandon now.
Yeah, say Susan Sarandon, Sarah.
Susan Sarandon.
I'm not proud.
Salma Hayek.
Elaine Stritch. Oh.
Tony's, I probably.
Yeah.
To Sarah.
Matt Damon.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Paul Giamatti? Okay.
Well, I don't know.
Well, pass. Allison, you're out. Yeah, you're out.
Yeah. Oh.
God, who wasn't on that show? What's her face?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, that means Tara gets the point.
Okay.
But Tara, do you want to just...
Julianne Moore?
Yeah,
was going to be my next one.
Okay. Here are the rest. Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, yeah.
Alan Alda. Brian Cranston.
Sure.
Christopher Walken.
Yep.
Don Cheadle. Emma Stone. James Franco. John Lithgow. Kristen Wiig. Martin Scorsese. Mary Steenburgen. Michael Keaton. Octavia Spencer. Oprah Winfrey. Paul McCartney. Queen Latifah. Rip Torn. Robert De Niro. Rob Reiner, Stanley Tucci, Tom Hanks, and Whoopi Goldberg.
My God.
Time for round two with 11 entries. Political figures who appeared on Parks and Recreation. Tara, you're first.
Oh, my boyfriend Joe Biden. To Allison.
Oh, Hillary Clinton? No. Ow.
Never watched it. John McCain?
Yep.
Oh.
Shit. Who else was in that scene with him? Olympia Snow? Oh my God.
Shit. Rod Blagojevich.
All right, Targets a point. Here are the rest. Barbara Boxer.
Right.
Cory Booker. Booker.
Mm-hmm. Booker.
Jill Biden.
Right.
Kristen Gildebrand.
Mm-hmm.
Madeleine Albright. Senator. Michelle Obama. Newt Gingrich. Orrin Hatch. Martin presents round three with 16 entries. People who have been Saturday Night Live cast members for 8 or more seasons.
Oh,
Tara.
Kenan Thompson. Goes to you, Allison.
Oh, sorry. Tina Fey. Damn
really?
It.
Yep.
Huh.
I guess she wrote for longer than she
yeah,
was a cast member.
That's
all
right.
Valued guest is going down.
Sarah in a blaze of non-glory right behind you. Dennis Miller?
Really?
Ooh, no.
I would have guessed him too.
Here are your cast members with 8 seasons or more. Al Franken, Amy Poehler, Bill Hader, Bobby Moynihan, Chris Parnell, Daryl Hammond, Fred Armisen, Horatio Sanz, Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis.
Sudeikis. Yeah. Kevin Nealon, Kyle Rudolph, Phil Hartman, Seth Meyers, Tim Meadows, Will Forte.
Hate potato.
What was that?
Hate potato. Not good at this game. Carry
you
on.
Too.
Round four. Comedies on must-see TV Thursdays from 93 through to 2000. 21
okay.
entries.
All right.
Here we go.
Okay. The single guy.
Wings.
Alpha.
Caroline in the City?
Nice. Suddenly Susan?
TV or bowel movement.
Friends?
Just shoot me?
Frasier?
Seinfeld?
Yep.
What was that piece of shit with what's his name for Weekend at Bernie's and Ernest Borgnine? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Does it exist?
Yes, but I think I already said it.
I think you did too. That was the single guy, right?
I think so.
Oh, okay. That is not my answer. My answer is something else. Another show. A little show I like to call Benson.
Fuck. Sorry.
Madman of the People?
What? Shit.
All right.
That you even pulled that is terrible.
Allison gets the point, but do you have another guess, Allison, just for shits and giggles?
Was Mad About You in that?
Yeah, it was.
All right, here's the other ones, guys.
Nice job, Allison.
Battery Park.
Right.
I'm old.
Boston Common.
Yeah.
Cursed. Daddy-O. What? Fired Up.
Daddy-O.
Hope and Gloria. Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
Naked Truth.
Oh, yeah.
Union Square.
Sure.
And the last one. Two more that nobody guessed. Veronica's Closet.
Oh, right.
And one big omission that I'm surprised Tara didn't guess. Will and Grace.
Well, I was trying to be cute and go the obscure ones. I didn't realize I outcuted myself.
Yeah.
You did. Hot potato. Round 5, comedies in which John Hamm is credited as a guest star.
Okay.
21 entries.
Wow.
Allison, you're first.
Oh, well, I only know one, so 30 Rock.
Sarah, sorry. Yep.
Children's Hospital?
Nice.
What?
That's a comedy?
Archer?
Benson. I wish.
Wet Hot American Summer?
Nice.
Oh.
Bob's Burgers?
shit. Brooklyn 99. I don't know.
No, but I'm sure that's coming.
Should be.
All right. So that's Tara's point. But Tara, any others? You're a big John Hamm fan.
I sure am. Parks and Recreation and Last Man on Earth were the next two I had.
All right. Other ones? Early in his career, I assume. Ally McBeal.
Yep. Gilmore Girls.
Here's a black mark on him. American Dad.
Ooh.
Angie Tribeca.
Oh, yeah.
For 2 seconds. That was a great cameo. Family Guy. Uh-oh. Gilmore Girls. Last Man on Earth. Metalocalypse. I don't know what he was.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Huh. No.
Parks and Rec. Robot Chicken. Saturday Night Live. SpongeBob SquarePants. Uh-huh. The Hughleys. The Increasing Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. The Sarah Silverman Program. The Simpsons. And one big one everybody missed. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And with that, let's hear the scores.
Okay. Allison has 1 point. I have 4 points. Sarah's looking to get on the board.
All right. Hot potato. All right. Now, Series 6. Yeah, sure. Series 6. It's British. Emmy winners for Best Comedy Series since 1990.
Okay.
All right. So we're two, Tara.
Sorry, series or?
Emmy winners, Best Comedy Series.
Series, okay.
Since 1990. 14 entries.
Okay, fucking Modern Family.
This might be missing a couple, but let's just go with Philly. All right. Math's not adding up here.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, I see. It's probably because they won multiple, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they repeat a lot.
Yep.
Okay, Allison.
Right, Modern Family is like 7 or something. So
Yeah. Frasier.
Seinfeld.
Nice. Arrested Development.
Parks and Rec. Oh, a crime.
I agree.
Transparent?
Tara, just for shits and giggles? Lots to choose from still.
30 Rock?
30 Rock, once. Yep.
Okay.
Allie McBeal? Cheers. Cheers. Everybody Cheers. Loves Raymond.
Cheers.
Frasier and Friends.
Frasier Murphy was said.
Brown. I think somebody said Seinfeld.
Yep.
Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah.
The God. Office.
Right.
Veep.
Oh,
and
sure.
Will and Grace.
Veep. Hot potato.
All right. It is round 7 TV series in which Ted Danson has appeared in at least 10 episodes.
Okay.
All right. TV series.
Yep.
That includes, this is comedy actor Ted Danson, but we're talking all TV series.
Got it.
All right.
Okay.
So to yep. Tara.
Sorry, regardless of genre.
That's right.
Okay. Becker.
Cheers.
Ink.
Wow. Oh my God. Nice pull.
I hope. Yeah.
I thought for sure I'd be reading that one at the end of this round, but.
Damages. What? Shit.
CSI.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fergal.
Right.
That thing he's in right now that I can't think of the name of.
No, no.
Getting Better or something like that.
Oh,
no, I don't know.
Right.
Is that your guess? Getting Better?
That's not it, but yeah.
Sarah?
I'm out, but do I get the point?
No. Yeah. Do you know what show she's talking about that he's in right now?
No.
That's The Good Place.
Nick Ryan will just post on it for us. Okay.
Also, Bored to Death.
Yeah.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Let Me Help You.
Never heard of it.
Is what? One I'd never heard of, but he
CSI
was in
CSI Cyber? Was he in that?
Huh?
Was he in Cyber
oh,
as
shit.
Well?
Wait.
He was in CSI Regular, too.
Yeah, and he was in Damages, Tara. Uh-oh.
Oh, that's all
right. Oh, no.
That's all right.
All right, up Tara's going to give you that point. All right, so that's a point for Sarah. There was a formatting error. Yes, he was in Cyber as well.
It's literally the only way I can get a point.
Extra Hot Great would like to officially apologize to all Damages fans for the oversight.
But when you said that, I was like, oh, maybe they're only like 8 episodes a season or something, because I know he wasn't in all of it.
No, I had to convert it from a tab delimited formula.
Got it.
Format, and something got...
The tabbing problem.
Yeah, tabbing problems. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Actors who have won an Emmy for doing a voice on The Simpsons, 9 entries.
Okay.
All right. To Sarah.
It's a guest voice Emmy?
Actors who have won... Any actors who have won an Emmy for doing a voice
okay.
on The Simpsons. Includes guests.
Okay.
Okay. God. I don't know. Harry Shearer.
That's who I was going to guess. Shit. Okay, well, if he hasn't, I don't know, James Woods?
Well, Allison gets the point, but do you have anything?
Oh, my God. I don't think I have a correct answer. Is it
give a guess.
Dan Castellan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here are your winners. Anne Hathaway.
Oh, God.
As
what?
Mentioned, Dan Castellaneta, Hank Azaria, Jackie Mason, Julie Kavner, Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, deserved.
That's good.
Marisha Wallace, Nancy Cartwright, and Yardley Smith.
So literally every cast member except Harry Shearer.
Exactly.
Of course.
Hot potato. All right, this is round 9. People who have hosted a Big Four late night talk show since 85. 21 possible answers, starting with Allison.
David Letterman.
Jay Leno.
Johnny Carson.
Conan O'Brien.
Jimmy Fallon.
Seth Meyers.
Stephen Colbert.
Tom Snyder. Why not?
Jimmy Kimmel.
I don't think she qualifies, but Chelsea Handler.
Not a big four.
Not big four.
No.
James Corden.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Carson Daly. His show is on in late night.
Yeah, it's on, I guess, after he qualifies. Seth Meyers. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's very late night.
Yeah. Almost early morning. But yeah, no, I qualifies. To Sarah. Still some big ones on the board. '85, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure was. I don't think this counts, but why not? Ted Koppel.
Is Bob Costas on the list?
No.
Okay.
But
okay. Was later? I think later. In.
Yeah, later.
Yeah,
was,
later was 90s.
It was after
yeah.
Letterman.
Yeah, he should have been on there. Yeah. Here's some other ones that you didn't get. Arsenio Hall.
Oh, yeah. Wait, he wasn't Big Four.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah, he's Big Four.
He was
Fox.
Syndicated.
It was Fox, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was syndicated.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Bill Maher.
Right.
Chevy Chase.
Right.
Ugh.
Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
Shit, I was going to say her.
Pat Sajak, apparently.
Yeah, that was Fox, too, I think.
Paul Robbins. Phil
no
Cohen. Ross Schaefer.
You're just making names up now.
Wanda Sykes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Wanda Sykes. Whew. Guys, this is round 10. Emmy, primetime Emmy hosts since 2000.
Okay.
All right. Primetime Emmy hosts since 2000. And because I guess they pair up sometimes, there's 21.
Okay.
There's 21. That's the only...
There was one year when a whole bunch of people
okay,
host.
There you go. There well,
five, people hosted,
there
I believe.
You go. There's your answer, Fishbulb.
Okay. Starting with me, right?
Correct.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, I was going to say her. Now all I can think of, Patricia Heaton paired up with her at one point. Was that before 2000?
Is that your answer?
Yeah. Damn it. Damn it. That's all I could think of.
Sarah.
Tina Fey.
Primetime Emmy host since 2000. Tina Fey.
She did the Golden Globes.
Tara, just for shits and giggles.
Okay. Andy Samberg.
Anything else?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Wait, Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, all of the late night guys did it, I think.
Yeah. All right, here you go. Bernie Mac.
Right.
Brad Garrett.
Oh.
Conan
really?
O'Brien.
Yeah.
Daryl Hammond. Dennis Miller. Gary Shandling. George Lopez. Heidi Klum. Howie Mandel. Jane Lynch. Jeff Probst.
Yeah, that was the year that all the reality host nominees
John Stewart,
hosted.
Martin Short. Neil Patrick Harris. Ryan Seacrest. Seth Meyers. Tom Bergeron.
Oh, the Burge. Sorry, buddy.
Rounding off the next list too, Wanda Sykes.
Sure.
Wanda Sykes. All right. Score break.
Okay. Sarah has one. Allison has two. I have seven.
All right. Back to it. Round 11. Actors who have appeared on more than 15 episodes of The Office. Of course, the U.S. edition.
Sure.
Here
so
we go.
Opening credits cast are allowed.
Actors who have appeared on more than 15 episodes of The U.S. Office.
All right.
Tara.
Steve Carell.
Mindy Kaling.
Rainn Wilson.
Creed Bratton.
The guy.
The hair.
Married to the lady.
Still lots of main cast members left.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just trying to think of their names. It's like I can't think. Oh, pass.
Krasinski, John Krasinski.
Yes, that's what I was trying to.
Mike Wazowski.
Kate Flannery.
I don't actually think this is her last name, but it's all I got. Jenna Fisher.
Sure is.
Oh, it is.
BJ Novak.
That guy with the teeth who's in The Hangover. Did we say him already?
No, you have not. I know who you're talking about. We haven't said him yet.
Tell you how thrown off this game style always gets me. God, I could draw you a picture of him, and I can't remember the guy's name.
Me too.
Ed Helms.
Ed Helms is the one you were searching for. Amy Ryan.
Correct.
Andy Buckley. Angela Kinsey. BJ Novak. Brian Baumgartner. Calvin Tenner. Catherine Tate. Clark Duke. Craig Robinson. David Denham. David Kochner. Is that how you pronounce
Keckner.
It? Keckner. Ellie Kepner. Kemper.
Kemper.
Hugh Dane. Jake Lacey. James Spader. Leslie David Baker. Mark Proch.
Yeah.
Oscar Nunez. And a bunch of others.
Yep.
Here we go. Hot potato, 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 hot potato. Round 12 for Tara.
Yep.
Shows for which Betty White was nominated for an Emmy. 10 entries.
Okay.
God.
Well, I'm going to assume Hot in Cleveland.
Shit.
Betty White.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Really? Just going to leave that fruit dangling there? Great.
Yep.
Golden Girls.
Yep.
Oh.
Probably SNL in some kind of bullshit. See?
It's tougher now.
Yeah. I don't know. One Life to Live. That's not it.
Yeah, I'm out too. Rhoda?
I don't know what else either.
All right. Number one, and this has actually happened. There's an Emmy with his show's name on it. Betty White's off their rockers.
No!
Wow.
Oh, wait, nomination. So that it probably
still,
didn't.
Still, there's an envelope with that show's name on it.
Yeah.
My Name is Earl.
Okay.
TV or Bowel Movement favorite, Suddenly Susan. The John Larroquette Show, The Practice, and Yes, Dear.
Oh. Hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato.
All right, this is round 13. Comedy series broadcast by FX.
Okay.
So that is a certain moment in time.
Yep.
Some shows have moved on to FXX. Some have not.
Yep.
Some were canceled before, guys. It's a rich tapestry, 22 entries.
Okay. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
You're the worst.
Started on FX.
My mind is now emptied of shows. Mm. Like, at all. Never mind.
FX.
Once they were on FX.
Comedy series.
Sons of Anarchy.
You're not even trying now.
No, I'm not.
Better
Why?
Things.
Why?
I cannot think. Have I ever watched anything on FX?
I know like, for a fact that you have.
Yeah.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
is that on the list?
Okay. What else was paired with? Is there something called Starved? Okay.
Wow.
That is deep. A deep cut.
Still
I've
some
got
big
nothing.
Ones on the board, guys.
I cannot think of anything.
All right. Here's some ones you missed. Anger Management. Archer.
Oh, Archer. Right.
Baskets. Right. Chosen. Legit. Yeah. Louie.
Oh, Chosen.
Louie.
Lucky.
Louie.
Married. Partners. Yeah. St. George. Six. Because there's no spaces. Son of the Beach. Testies. The Comedians. The League.
The League.
Oh, the league.
Unsupervised and Wilfred. Wilfred or Wilfred?
Wilfred, yeah. Wilfred,
yeah. So let's get the scores here before our last round.
Okay. Well, Sarah has one, Allison has two, I have 10.
That's anybody's game.
Damn.
Anybody's but mine.
Fucking Martin.
Round 14. Guest starring appearances by Judy Greer. 22 entries. All right. So yep. This is... just doing a quick look. Yep, it is any genre.
Okay.
Judy Greer, comedy, actor, Judy Greer.
Yep.
Any genre show, take it away, Tara.
Masters of Sex.
Damages. I don't know.
You were so confident. I was like, I didn't know she was in that.
I really don't know either.
I was trying to fake you out.
The Larry Sanders Show. Because why not?
That was quick. Tara, got any more?
Arrested Development.
Yeah.
She was in How I Met Your Mother. I don't know any others.
Here's the others. Big Bang Theory.
Of course.
BoJack Horseman. Californication. CSI Miami. Dan Versus. Early Edition. ER.
Early Edition. My God.
Family Guy. House. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Just Shoot Me. Maggie Winters. Misguided is on here, but that's not a guest appearance. That's
no, I don't think
leading role.
The Winters one was, I think she was the lead in that.
Oh, yeah. Modern Family, Mom, My Name is Earl. Oh, Baby. It was a TV series. Robot Chicken and 2.5 Men. Let's hear the final scores, please, Tara.
Okay. Sarah had 1, Allison had 2, I had 11.
All right. So Tara wins by a healthy margin, but we got our tiebreaker here for Shits and Giggles. I'm going to start somebody off the next season in style with 2 steel meals.
Ooh.
All right. Last person left alive will start next season with 2 steel meals, which lets you steal an answering opportunity from another person who just got the question wrong. All right. Got an Emmy nomination for appearing on Cheers. 18 entries.
Oh, boy.
Tara, we'll start with you.
Okay. Emma Thompson, probably.
Shit.
and just I'm gonna read this again. Got an Emmy nomination for appearing on Cheers.
Oh, so it could be leading actors as well. Duh.
Rhea Perlman.
Sarah.
Yes, I'm still here somehow. Shelley Long.
Ted Danson.
Here we go.
Woody Harrelson.
Ratzenberger.
Ratzenberger. Went.
Kelsey Grammer.
What is that guy's name?
Yeah.
What is that
Still
other guy's
big
name?
Big names on the board, guys. At least one, anyways.
Yeah.
I would say 2.
Don't say big names. Huh. That's rude.
Yes, it is rude of me to say big names.
Oh, God.
Big names.
I was trying to help.
I don't get it. Well, now I'm blanking on her name, so...
All right, Allison, you just got 2 steel meals for the value guess.
Hey!
But you got another answer?
I was going to say Bebe Neuwirth, which
yep,
is not
that
the
was
joke
by
we were
maybe
to
a
make.
Second big name, correct?
Yeah.
Kirstie Alley.
That's the one I was saying. Don't say it's big. That's rude.
I know.
Here's your other ones: Alexis Smith, Frances Sternhagen, Egan,
right?
Georgia Brown, Harvey Firestein.
Oh.
John Cleese.
Right.
Okay.
Nicholas Cassolano.
Yeah. Colasano.
Right. Colasano.
Coach.
Sada Thompson. Oh, wait. Sada Thompson. Oh, I wonder if that was supposed to be Emma Thompson. Sada Thompson? Who is that?
I don't know.
That might have been Emma Thompson. Something really terrible happened to his list. Sheldon Leonard. Tom Berenger.
Oh, yeah.
Our list.
Right.
Oh, right.
Woo. All right, guys.
Good job, Tara.
Thanks.
Tara. Tara. Wins is the day and the season. Nothing's ever gonna keep you down. You're the best. What you're doing. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. Congratulations, Tara. There we go. Well, guys, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We retreated to the cabin of our minds to discuss the family of This Is Us before Sarah disturbed the peace with a blotter presentation of Fatal Vision, and Tara and Dave celebrated playing with poo on Twitter. We then went around the dial with stops at Gilmore Girls, Search Party, Below Deck, and Westworld. Matthew made a successful pitch for the How I Met Your Mother season finale's induction into the Nonak. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time and the season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
baby say what?
Sarah D. Bunting.
See you at Christmas.
And Allison Lohuff.
Who?
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
We'll get around to it. It's just, you know, with life and jobs and kids. Plus, this one's still insisting on getting married in a French castle.
I'd get married tomorrow in a White Castle.
This guy needs more wow factor.
You're all the wow factor I need.
Aww. This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.